Herzlich willkommen zum Podcast Dein starkes Ich. Ein Podcast für mehr Achtsamkeit und Selbstfreundschaft im Alltag. Hier bekommst du Impulse und Tools an die Hand, wie du in eine gute Beziehung zu dir selbst und somit in dein starkes Ich kommst. Mein Name ist Jennifer und ich wünsche dir viel Freude bei der jetzigen Folge. Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge hier im Starken Ich Podcast. Ich freue mich sehr, dass du eingeschaltet hast, denn in der heutigen Folge ist ganz viel Gold drin. Die heutige Folge ist ein Gespräch, welches ich mit Lizzie van Hende führen durfte. Sie ist systemischer Coach und bald auch Therapeutin und eine liebe Kollegin aus der Neo Emotional Release Ausbildung. Gerade wenn es darum geht, in der Beziehung zu uns selbst zu wachsen, in unser starkes Ich zu kommen, ist es wichtig zu verstehen, dass unser Familiensystem, das System, in das wir reingeboren werden, einen großen Einfluss auf unsere emotionalen Blockaden haben kann, aber eben auch auf Überzeugungen, die wir haben, an denen wir vielleicht schon gearbeitet haben und irgendwie nicht davon loskommen. Und genau da lohnt es sich, einen Blick in das Familiensystem zu werfen und wirklich mal zu schauen, was sind denn so die Regeln, in Anführungszeichen, dieses Familiensystems. Darüber spreche ich mit Lizzie. Es geht aber auch darum, woran wir erkennen können, dass eventuell ein Problem oder eine Herausforderung, der wir begegnen, gar nicht wirklich von uns kommt, sondern von den Generationen davor an uns weitervererbt wurde. Und wie wir da eben zu einer Lösung kommen dieser Überzeugung oder dieser emotionalen, energetischen Blockade. Dieses Gespräch hat so viele Erkenntnisse für mich auch nochmal bereitgestellt. Die Session, die ich mit Lizzie eben auch hatte, eine persönliche Session über mein Familiensystem, hat mir auch ganz, ganz viele Erkenntnisse geliefert und ich habe sofort gespürt, dass ich einfach mehr Energie hatte und mehr bei mir war nach dieser Session. Also ich kann Lizzies Arbeit sehr, sehr empfehlen, ans Herz legen. Schau sehr gerne rein. Lizzie ist aus Belgien, das heißt, die Kommunikationssprache ist auf Englisch, dementsprechend ist auch das Interview auf Englisch. Wenn du kein und nicht so gut Englisch verstehst oder dass dich das Thema trotzdem interessiert, kann ich dir das Interview von Monja Harschaf ans Herz legen, welches ich mit ihr geführt habe. Sie ist deutschsprachig und Familienaufstellerin und sie spricht eben in dem Interview auch über systemisches Aufstellen, wie das funktioniert, wie Familienstellen funktioniert und eben auch, was das systemische Ansatz ist. Also da kannst du auch sehr gerne reinhören. Ich verlinke dir alle Infos, also zu der besagten Folge, aber eben auch alle Infos zu Lizzie findest du in der Beschreibung der Folge. Und jetzt werde ich ins Englisch wechseln. And I want to greet now all the listeners who are not speaking German and who probably did not understand much from what I've said before. Welcome to this show, to this episode. It's really an episode that has so many gold nuggets in it. Basically, in this show, it's about the relationship that we have to ourselves, how we can improve the relationship that we have to ourselves, how we can become a better version of ourselves. And often what we don't know is that we are also influenced by the system we are born in, the family system. And that emotional blockages, but also beliefs that we have about ourselves that we rationally know are not true, but emotionally we feel it differently, can come from our family system, can be inherited emotional blockages. And to have a look at the family system and to have a look at all the rules that systemic work is talking about is so valuable. So I'm talking about this with an expert, with a systemic coach, a soon-to-be therapist, and a very dear colleague from the Neo Emotional Release Training. Lizzie van Hende was my guest, and I gained so many insights from this conversation, And I'm really, really happy that you have the opportunity to listen into it. I can highly recommend the work from Lizzie. I myself did also a session with her, gained so many insights, so much energy from that conversation and from that consult. So I can highly recommend her and her work. Please have a look at all the links that I will put in the description of the episode, and in case you feel the calling, reach out to Lizzie. It's super, super valuable. And now I want to give the word to Lizzie and wish you a wonderful time with this conversation. Welcome, Lizzie, to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you here. You're a systemic coach, and we had a chat about systemic laws, and I got really curious, and I wanted to give the opportunity to other people to learn more about systemic laws and how systemic laws are translating into our day-to-day life and into our identities and into our behaviors. So I'm super, super glad that you accepted the invite and that you're here. And yeah, welcome.
Thank you, Jennifer.
And so we were having a little chat before recording, and there were already some quite nice wisdom nuggets for me, at least. And for the people who are listening, who maybe are thinking, okay, what is systemic, or what are systemic laws? Could you explain a little bit, you know, that the people who are not so familiar with systemic coaching or systemic laws, what it is and how it works?
Systemic laws come from the work of Bert Hellinger, which is a German guy that started family constellations and stuff. And the laws are more like a natural order, like what are our basic needs also to get energy and balance. So what are the basic things that we need in order for things to flow and be natural? If those are not being respected in a way, we get blocked. We feel that things are not really flowing, and that is that is what we saw in systemic work, that sometimes if people get sick, if people get symptoms emotionally, physically, it has most of the time a connection to something in the energy, in the system that has not been respected. And respected is maybe not the right word to say, but it's blocked and is not being there in natural biological order.
Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty interesting and also intense. So do you have maybe an example of what a block or maybe the definition of flow and blockages is like? When do I feel blocked? I don't know. Like, maybe I'm not super conscious about what is blocked. And also the terminology energy is like, okay, energy, how do I feel energy? I'm not a Reiki person. How do I feel it? How, like a regular person who's not had so many encounters with energy or something like that, like how would you feel that there is, for example, a blockage in your system? Like, a system would be the family, the parents, the siblings, I guess.
It's bigger. It's like your grandparents, and definitely like your family tree. An energy block could be feeling like the black sheep and noticing that you've been handled different, that there's things that are not going, and that when you stay in your own family, things are fine. But if you look at friends, you see that the dynamic is completely different. If you have difficulties with finding your purpose or trying to figure out why you're here or what you're good at, that could be a block. If you have questions about who you are and you're like, I don't really know, and you have no connection to your parents, that could be a block. If you have drained energy, like you have a burnout, it could possibly be connected to a pattern that was not in line with the normal order or with the organic order. Because those compensations of getting attention or whatever starts in childhood. And it becomes a pattern when you're older and you lose your energy or you start pleasing. For example, pleasing could also be a sign of something in your system, in your dynamic that has not been right.
Mm-hmm.
What is right?
Yeah, talking of the law, talking of right and wrong, which is always a bit challenging, no? Because it seems like, okay, there's like an overall order or, you know, there's like right and wrong. But what would you say is like the normal order, is like a function, like how it should be, or how a system is a healthy system? Also regarding to that, what could be a dysfunction? I mean, you already mentioned the consequences in the behavior, on the behavioral level or also emotional level, how you would feel or how you would behave. But what would be like a normal order, or how you were saying?
There's like Bert Hellinger speaks about three specific laws. I use five.
Mm-hmm.
Because they go a little bit deeper or a little bit more in detail. But the three laws that Bert uses are connection, the need to connection, the need to connect to people and be part of the group, because we are social beings, whether we like it or not, we need the group in order to survive. So we're gonna do whatever it takes to be connected to the group, even if it's toxic or not good for ourselves. We need that. So that could be a balance shift, or like something that you have been compensated because you didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get the connection in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
The second law is order. Everything has an order. Like, parents have responsibility towards their children. Children don't have responsibilities towards their parents. You can see that in nature. A mother lion will take care of her cubs, but she doesn't expect her cubs to take care of her, because that's the other way around. That's not the way responsibility is.
Mm-hmm.
But in our society, a lot of times we make our children responsible for how we feel as parents. Mm-hmm. Not all the time, but sometimes it's there, and a kid feels that they want to see their parents happy. Because when a parent is happy, there's more chance that the parent can take care of them. So there you can already see disturbance in energy flow and in responsibility. And then the third law with Bert is balance. There always needs to be a balance between give and take.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't need to be between people specifically, but also in the system between generations. In the generations, as in parents to children, to the grandchildren, to that way, the energy goes towards life, towards the next generation. So a child doesn't have to give the same amount of energy back to a parent. But if the child gives back more to a parent than is supposed to, you get out of balance within your energy as some yourself.
So you feel drained and exhausted.
Yeah. For example, in horizontal relationships, which means relationships between siblings, between friends, between your partner, there the balance needs to be equal. Same in your work space, the balance between giving energy to your workplace and receiving energy in the form of a salary or recognition or whatever needs to be in balance. Otherwise, you get into a burnout.
Mm.
And it goes with money as well. It goes between bigger systems. You can see that in continents as well, like as a Western countries or Europe or whatever, we have been taking a lot from third world countries. So that energy balance is off. Mm-hmm. So it's not weird that we as a Western society start pouring money in third world countries. Not that that is the solution, but it's not weird that that from some way nature tries to rebalance that.
So would you say that the nature of things is just there? Okay,
we as an organism try to either compensate the balance or look for a way to restore it, And most of the time it's crooked because there's a block somewhere. And you see that, for example, with water, mm-hmm. it wants to go to the ocean, but if there's a block, it goes around it. And because it goes around it, it loses energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it doesn't find the most efficient way to go to the water. Mm-hmm. So, and if we find a way to the water, that's fine, to the sea, but sometimes we make a turn. Just to make sure that the energy keeps flowing or that our needs are being met, even though maybe it's not in the way that it's supposed to be. But because we are detached from nature more and more, we have no clue about what it should be. And most of the time that is because of trauma, mm-hmm. because of a wound that is not healed. And you see that in your skin as well. If you have a scar tissue, that tissue is not the same and it will heal, but it doesn't have the same flexibility. There is a wound there, but there it's healed. If you have a wound, something emotionally, a mourning process, that a grieving process that you have not been healed about, then that gets stuck, that energy gets stuck, it gets frozen. But life force is like movement. So if there's an energy block, you can compare it with physics. If there's an energy block, if the energy is frozen, life force is not there. And you will feel it. It's harder to go there. It's harder to find your way through it, or you're going to avoid it. And that costs more energy. Mm. That stagnant energy also infects the cells around it. So it becomes bigger and bigger. And as a nature, we try to avoid pain. Mm-hmm. But actually, we have to go through the pain. Mm-hmm. So we make the blocks most of the time bigger because we're not aware of it. It's consciously, unconsciously.
So when things feel exhausting, when we feel drained energy-wise, when we feel lost, that could be, or we don't know who we are in the world, or why we're here, or what we are, like the big questions. If we have that in our lives, this could be a hint that yeah. there is something in the system that that is not correct in the sense of that there is a blockage that needs to be unblocked, so to say. So it could manifest on an emotional level, on a physical level.
An energetic level, as in like you don't have enough energy, you feel burned out. You can see it in patterns. For example, you always attract the same kind of partners. Mm-hmm. That's most of the time linked to the relationship with your parents, which was not in the way it's supposed to be. Like there was something, you were taking care of your mom, or you were protecting your dad, or you were loyal to whatever, because you felt that if you were, you could get attention. And we need that attention. We need that connection in order to survive. Mm. So we will try to adjust ourselves and lose parts of ourselves, or the connection to ourselves. And it's there that we feel something's off. Mm. I don't know what it is. I don't understand. But something's off. Why do I know what I want and I cannot reach it? Mm. Why do I always feel sad? But I have no specific reason, or I know something that I could be sad about and I've worked on that, but nothing changes. There's probably something subconscious or something that has not been talked about that is driving us, keeping repeating the pattern. Because the emotion underlying or the energy dynamic underlying is not being addressed.
That's super interesting. I had that with sadness, and like deep, 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 deep sadness. I still, until now, I know where more or less where it's coming from family-wise, but I felt it's not my sadness. Like I've not had any, I don't know, any loss when I was a child or something, at least not that I'm aware of. And this deep, deep grieving, and where I don't know how to describe it. It's really weird, but I felt it's not mine. Like it's not my sadness. I couldn't connect it to something. So
and I it could be It could be a sadness that comes from your mom or whatever, because when you are in the womb, you are marinated in all the feelings that your mom has.
Mm.
And we become loyal to that. For example, as a kid, you're happy and your mom is sad and she cannot have it. You're going to make your happiness smaller and stay loyal to her sadness so it can get a place. If people are angry, but they don't feel it, some of the children will have anger issues because they want to vent that excess energy. And you as an adult are not connected to it anymore because it was too dangerous or overwhelming or whatever. So some of your kids, if you have kids, or your dogs or your pets or whatever, will vent that energy because they want to heal the system. Mm-hmm. Problem is that somebody else cannot vent something for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a sadness that is not yours, it's interesting to look for it. Where in your system, where does it come from? And then in a way, give it back. Or see in what way it has affected you. If there's a sadness in your lineage, there's a possibility that you're not being able to show your happiness because it was triggering the sadness or the lack of happiness with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So you dim your light.
Mm-hmm.
Or you wanted connection with your mom and the sadness was in the way, so it affects you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be also a layer for yourself to work with. Okay, this sadness is not mine, but the sadness there has been a block in the energy or the connection exchange between me and my mom, me and my grandmother, me and my dad, or in the system. We don't talk about it. If you tiptoe around it, the energy is not gone. The emotion is not gone. And that is one of the laws that I use as well. Like, nothing disappears. One way or another, it will show. It will come out in a way, in a physical symptom, in a behavior, in a pattern, most of the time unconscious, because you're holding on to something that you have no idea of. And if you have no idea that you're holding on to something, you cannot let it go.
Mm.
You have to start being aware of that. Okay, there was sadness that nothing has been done with that.
Mm.
And I'm carrying it because it wants to be out. It wants to be seen. It wants to be released. And that's where emotional releases can come in to help that part. You can do family constellation work and work on your systemic loss with emotional releases, for example.
Mm-hmm.
To get it out of your system and acknowledge what emotions that were there that are suppressed.
Yeah, and it's kind of the system, name it to tame it, no? Like in order to have it from the subconscious or unconscious up into the conscious, then you have a name to it. You know, I know this sadness is the sadness, I don't know, of my grandmother who was in war, for example, and who lost somebody, you know.
Yeah.
And so I can see and witness that sadness coming up, and I know, this is my grandmother's sadness, for example, you know.
Yeah.
And then this helps me to get more and more in touch with who am I as a person. But before we dive into that, you were saying there are five laws of the systemic thing, and I think we got to four, right?
Yes. There's also place. Everything and everybody has a place. And if the place has not been taken, lived in, then somebody else will try to look or house that place. For example, if you have a family and the dad is not there, then there's a chance that the son will take the place of the father unconsciously, because that there's a void. If it's not been talked about and the mother says, no, this is not your responsibility, you're the kid and I'm the parent, and yes, it's a pity that there's no father figure, whether that is a man or somebody from the family or the community that helps out, there's a chance that the son or a daughter or whatever will take their responsibility because they feel the mother is struggling, but then they're not living their own life. And they come in conflict internally with what is my responsibility, what is not, in which lineage of the generations am I? And they get lost.
Mm-hmm.
Also, children, brothers and sisters, siblings, don't accept that. that a brother or sister becomes on top of that, and you get competition. Because why is that person there?
You get competition, or you could also get like a certain, like everything adapts as well, that yeah. you are then the responsible yeah. person for all the matters, and that they can yeah. lay back, like, you know, have a laid back.
Yeah. And then you don't have your childhood. You are being put in an adult position at a child age, which means that it's hard because you have needs as a child, and you get way too much responsibility, and you get out of balance with your own emotions, with your own responsibility. It's very hard to start taking responsibility for your own stuff because you have been taking responsibility for so many other things that were not yours in the first place. Mm. And then you get conflicted there.
Mm-hmm. So does it mean if I don't take responsibility for my own life that I tend to leave the decisions
the other way around? You'd start taking responsibilities for others because yeah. They are not taking theirs. And because of that, it's already too much weight on your shoulders. You cannot take your own.
And how would that look like? That I don't take decisions, or that I don't go
Or you take too much responsibility for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you don't take responsibility for your own happiness. It's somebody else. Mm-hmm. Or you don't take responsibility for your actions. Mm-hmm. Or so for your health.
Mm-hmm. So that you would say, okay, I'm not happy in my job, but I don't look into it. Like, I don't see, okay, what could I change? Could I change the job, the position? What is actually important for me? So I wouldn't look into that because I'm already concerned about my parents, about my siblings.
They're not doing their job. I'm taking responsibility there. I'm taking responsibility for the happiness of somebody else. Whilst actually the only person you are responsible for emotionally and for happiness is you. But what happens in relationships and dynamics and families that the mom or the dad says, you make me sad when you do that. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it's not the responsibility of a kid. It hurts me when you do that, but that's not your responsibility. It triggers me. And that's where it gets confused. Children still need to learn, and they start taking responsibility for the happiness of their parents. So whenever a parent is sad or angry, they think, oh, I've done something wrong and I have to fix it. But you have no control over whether somebody feels happy or sad. And then you get drained. So you're going to change your behavior, hoping that your mom will become happy, which doesn't. And then you feel like, okay, I have no impact on situations, so whatever I do will never be enough, and you get drained
and feel helplessness
and so then you're gonna look for outside things to get confirmation, to feel good, to get acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. And that's where you lose connection with your own needs, with yourself, with your health, with all these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super super interesting. Because I think a lot of people know that. Or for example, if a mother feels sad because the child wants to go, I don't know, to the aunt or the uncle for a sleepover, and they cannot process their own grief, like, oh, my little girl or boy is going to get older and it's going to leave home. And then the child, even though it's not spoken out, even though the mother is not saying, oh, I'm sad that you're leaving for tonight, the child might feel she's not happy, so I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't, even though I want it and I feel good about it, I shouldn't do that.
The thing what happens in the mind of a child is, I feel not a nice emotion, so this is dangerous. And they get into a conflict within themselves. This is what I want, but this is what happens with my mom. So I lose connections to my own needs, and I take responsible for the effects of my needs mm-hmm. in somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's taking responsibility for something that is not yours to take.
Mm. But how, I imagine now a mother listening to this episode and thinking, oh shit, like I am sad. That's natural, you know, like
it's okay to be sad, but tell the kid, mommy is sad, but that's not your responsibility. I'm a grown girl and I can take care of myself, or I will ask for a friend, and it's part of you growing up. So it's good, go, And sometimes that will hurt me, but it's okay. You can do that. It's your life. And like, put those thoughts into perspective. Yeah. Like, it's not your responsibility. I can be sad, but it doesn't mean that you have to take care of me and express that part. Mm-hmm. So a child learns that emotions don't mean that something bad is happening, because that is what the brain of a child does. Like, oh, this is dangerous. If you say A and you do B, if you say this is safe or do that and you don't do it yourself, then it gets conflicted into a child, because energetically they feel something is not right. Mom is saying A, but does B, so B is going to be safer.
So mom is saying, it's okay that you leave, but I feel the energy of sadness, or that that's not okay, also in the mimic, like in the face. And that is why I think, okay, so there's like a conflict, there's a confusion, like, okay, she says it's okay, but I feel it's not okay. So what does it do, like in a system?
It depends. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people detach completely. Mm-hmm. They can detach from their own needs. They don't trust their own intuition. Mm-hmm. And that's where you lose connection with yourself and with okay, what is okay and what is not okay. And I get fear of emotions, fear of sadness, fear of whatever, because I feel like I have to fix it. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it's not your job to fix it. It's just a reaction to something that is painful. If, for example, mama bear doesn't want to give milk anymore, or like a dog, she just stands up and lays somewhere else. Even though the puppies are crying, she needs a little bit of rest. So she's going to take it in order for them to be able to take care of her pups. But because we lost connection of what we need and when we need rest because of our childhood, we're going to overstep our own boundaries. Don't take care of ourselves, don't take responsibility for our own health and our own needs, and we're going to project them on our kids and expect them to compensate those things. So it just continues generation after generation after generation until you look at your own stuff and you start healing that, so you can break those patterns.
We're going to come in a minute to that. I just wanted to re-summarize like the five laws. Just quickly to get like, because we've talked a lot, and just to have it like more for also for me, I don't think I remember all the laws. Can you name them? Like, all
them? You've got connection, which means loyalty. Mm-hmm. You are loyal to where you've got life from. Mm-hmm. And you need that connection in order to survive. Mm-hmm. Like it's a gene thing. Mm-hmm. You want to know where you're coming from and you want to belong to a bigger part. We need connection. We need that. Then you have place. Everything and everybody has a place in order in a system, in the world. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we forget about that and we mix those places. But if everybody takes their place, then there's place for everybody and there's no competition. Mm-hmm. Then we have the ranking, the order. There's an order. There's a way. You have the king, and then people below that. And in the animal world, you see that you have one alpha lion, and the rest have their place, and they are important too. Because if one of them falls out, there's a gap. Mm-hmm. So it's the ranking is important, and that doesn't mean that somebody is more important than the other. Mm-hmm. That's not it. But their ranking is important. And that's, for example, where you see in companies when the CEO, for example, is not really the CEO. If somebody else takes a decision, you get a conflict there. And it's very confusing for people. It doesn't give safety, because then everybody else makes decisions and it becomes very messy. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the balance between receiving and giving, the energy. Mm-hmm. And between generation, it's more giving from parents to the children, and it doesn't have to come back, because you give to life and not to death, because older people are closer to death. And I'm not saying with that we just have to drop old people in old houses and don't look at them, but it's interesting to see, if you have a family, if you have kids, your kids come before the needs of your parents. Mm-hmm. Because you give to life, they need you. Mm-hmm. And those older people will have to wait a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then the fifth one is nothing disappears.
Mm-hmm.
One way or another, if something has not been talked about, secrets or whatever, there's always somebody in the system, the most sensitive most of the time, that will go look for it because they feel something is not right. They feel there's some energy not flowing. There is something that is stuck. And unconsciously, people go look for that. And that happens, for example, when there's been an abortion or there's been a miscarriage and it's been not been talked about. People get confused. Who am I? Do I take the path of the child that was supposed to be born before me, or do I walk my own path?
So that could be like that's not consciously, like I don't think about that, but I feel like I don't find where I belong to, or I don't find my place in the world.
If it's conscious, then most of the time it's been talked about. And then that person or that event in somebody's life has had a space, has a place. And it doesn't mean that it needs to have giant space or whatever, but it helps. Like, yeah, we've lost a baby and we've been mourning about that. And that baby would have been named this, but we're happy that you're there. And that's the life path of that person.
So basically,
that's all.
Yeah, and it's not something like, oh, I talked about my sibling who was who died as at 3 months or something, that now I find my life purpose. It's more like on a subtle, unconscious level because this is difficult, I think, to for people to understand, maybe, you know, because it's not something we can touch. It's nothing we can physically see, or it's no relation that's cause and effect. Like, oh, my mother talked about, or I asked my mother about miscarriages. She talks about it. And now I feel like my life has a sense, you know.
No, most of the time, emotions underneath that, whether your parents have been grieving about the loss of their baby, if not, it's in the system of your mother, and you've been grown into that system, and it's going to be hard for her to get attached to you, or she gets over attached to you. So you don't have the freedom or the space that you need to grow into the person that you are. So they're going to overprotect you, for example, because of they lost a child and they don't want to lose another because it's too painful. And you deal with the consequences of that. Or you feel that your mom is sad because she looks at you. And when she looks at you, she misses the other baby that could possibly be there. And you as a child have no idea. So you think it's because you did something. And then you're going to look for things. What did I do wrong? And you're going to adjust yourself instead of just being who you are. If your mother owns, like, okay, when I look at you, I feel sad because I miss the other baby, but that's not your fault. That's not your responsibility. That is just something that happens with me, and it happens because I have so much love for you. Then the responsibility has been split. The child can understand why the mom is sad and that it's not their job to take care of it. And then it becomes okay with emotions. It doesn't take responsibility. Emotions just come and go. And a child is, most of children in the beginning are liberated to get out whatever they're getting out of. And we get raised to get that down, suppress it, because it triggers feelings of our parents that they cannot relate to. And then you start adjusting yourself and you become less and less free. And that takes a lot of energy because you cannot fully express who you are. And that just gets stuck in your system, that gets drained energy, that gets like, okay, I don't know who I am because I was not allowed to have whatever out that I wanted out.
And it can also affect the relationships that we have, whether it's to friends or to partners, because we reproduce that, actually, no? That feeling or the lack or the responsibility for others. So basically, we're transmitting subconsciously patterns that we have inherited or adapted through the unconscious.
Nature has the urge to heal itself. So we repeat patterns over and over and over again until we get it right. Problem is that we have our minds, and we want to repeat it and get it right, but then we get triggered in pain and then we continue the old pattern again. So we're going to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it until we will be able, our system will be able to finish the movement that we were not able to make.
Can you explain? Because that sounds super, I know what you mean by that, but that sounds super abstract. Like, do you have like an example how that healing could take place? I mean, we already said name it so you can tame it. So in order to, for us to understand who we are or why certain patterns are there, it can be helpful to, to get to know about it. And then we know it. For example, when we were having the conversation in our training, like in the training session we had with one another, I was talking about the way like I feel loyal to my father, although it not has been a very, not always a harmonious relationship, and also that I'm pretty like in this yang energy, like in this masculine energy, if we want to say it like that, and I'm a doer, I want to do stuff, and I'm like not very well in receiving or in resting, and I overcompensate myself, like I'm overcompensating. And you were saying that it's due to you can maybe say what you were saying. That's due to my father, that I have loyalty.
Yeah, you said at some point, my dad always wanted a boy.
Yeah.
And I was the first born and I'm a girl. And unconsciously, as a child, you picked that up.
Mm.
So you're not welcome for the person that you are. And we, as human beings, as social beings, want to be acknowledged and seen for who we are. But if you feel that there's something there and that you're not completely welcome for who you are, you will adjust yourself hoping that you will be loved and you will be seen. Well, that actually not your responsibility. You cannot choose what sex you come out with. And that's also like an idea and concept of mind that your dad has, that there's a need of him to have a son to pass something on to whatever, because he wants to heal maybe his own relationship with his dad.
Mm.
And he thinks subconsciously that he can heal that. So that's the pattern you repeat to heal that with his son. I will make that up. I'm going to show that I can do it better.
Mm.
Or I need that masculine energy, so I would want to have a son to do that. I did not have friends and I want somebody to go fishing with. So mm-hmm. I want a son, for mm-hmm. example. Or as a man, I want a daughter because I want to take care of them and I want to do this and then I want to do that. So it's not about the person itself and who they are, because sometimes girls are not completely like that, but then they become like that because they feel that that is what their fathers or mothers need.
Mm. So basically they have like a subconscious how do you say, an Auftrag in German? It's like a...
In Dutch, it's overdracht, but it's like, a projection.
Yeah, so I feel like my mother wanted, it's not the case, but my mother wanted a doll, to dress me nicely and to, make braids or whatever. And so I become that kind of girly girl, although I don't...
In order to fulfill her needs, so she will be there for you, because we want love.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe, and that's how it comes up in relationships. We want love and we want to be seen for who we are. But if we do things out of a pattern, we get the love for pretend behavior, mm-hmm. for a role kind of like unconsciously that we play. So it's hard to receive the love that somebody gives you, because then subconsciously or unconsciously you think, if I would show who I really am, they will not love me.
Mm.
So that's the pattern you repeat. And then you're like, but you don't love me, or you don't show me the love, but you also don't show up as yourself. So it's like...
So could it manifest in feeling it's never enough?
Yeah.
Like whatever my partner does, it's never enough. He or she could have done this or that or this or that. It's never enough.
And sometimes we do unconsciously, we do things for our partner because we want to get the praise,
mm-hmm.
instead of actually being loved for who we are and not for what we do. And then we get mad because I did this and this and this for you. And then the other person says, but I didn't ask you. And that's our unconscious pattern. I'm going to do this, and then they're going to love me. And then you revenge them because you have been doing things and you don't get their perceived or hoped for reaction. Mm-hmm. And it get a whole pattern because there's a need underneath of yourself that you are not addressing, mm-hmm. that you're not showing, but you become angry with them if they don't acknowledge you for those things. Mm-hmm. Because we detached completely from the needs underneath. Mm-hmm. Because as a kid, that need was not safe. Or we gotten the needs fulfilled by doing certain actions and not just because that was our need.
Mm-hmm. So I would find out about this when I look at my life and I see things repeating, right? Like when I see it's always the same partners I attract, it's always the same feeling I have when I'm with people, you know, that I feel I'm not enough, I don't do enough, I feel guilty, I feel that I have to do something in order to be liked, or I have to make presents or whatever, you know, like
or I know I want to do this and I don't do it. Why do I don't do it? Like what is there? I would love to do more art, but I don't. I had always the idea that I wanted to play music. It's interesting to look for, okay, is that my wish? Do I really want to play music? Or is that something that my parents wished for and I didn't do because I was not looking for it, but it's unconsciously like in my system. Mm-hmm. That is what I should do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or in family, sometimes you have lawyers or doctors that go from generation to generation, and that's what it's supposed to. But that doesn't give you any room to figure out what it is that you actually want.
So how would that manifest? So if I studied medicine, or I did that because my father or my mother is a doctor, and how would I see that it has a negative effect on me or my life? Like,
if at some point you feel drained, and sometimes it's interesting to have that question, like, do I do this for me? Or do I do this because that's what I've seen? And it's not always consciously. It's not always that you see the signs immediately, but it's an interesting question. What if you would not, for example, be a doctor? Would you still believe that your parents would love you? And yeah, then you can yeah. see where, okay, was I free to choose whatever?
Yeah, was
or
I
was it also a way to bond with my parent and get that connection? Because, yeah, that is what they did. For example, I did math in high school, not because I wanted it, but because that was my way to connect with my dad. I wanted to do art, and there was no way that I was going to do that. I wasn't allowed. So I adjusted. But that also means that I did not have any interest in school. I was smart enough, so it was kind of easy, but I was not happy. It was not my place. It was hard for me to make friends because I was not at a place that was connected to me. So I adjusted and I became like the gray mouse, but I was not happy at all because I was not following my needs and my urges and what was good for me.
And the art thing, that it was not not acceptable, was nothing that was said out loud, I imagine. It was just like...
They did. At some point, I think I was 14, I said, I want to go to art school. And my dad was, you're way smart for that, too smart for that. Only dumb people go there and you're going to have a sad, horrible life. Well, actually, that would probably be a way... way more interesting way for me to start connecting with my creativity, and like from there allow that to bloom and see what comes from it. And now whenever I'm confronted with creativity, I get blocked because it's suppressed. Even in other situations, even for example with math, if you have to prove certain theses and stuff like that, you have to be a little bit more creative. Mm-hmm. And I got blocked on that because it was for losers, it was not good. So I generalized it with everything that was creativity. I got blocked.
Mm-hmm.
As a little kid, as a toddler, I loved to draw. And at some point, I could only have a picture and go over it and color it in, but don't draw myself, because I got conflicted with, oh, art is for losers and it's not good. And he gave me the impression that it was, yeah, he was not going to love me like that. It was not a good thing for me. It was lesser than doing mathematics, for example. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely like, it blocks your development, your like trying to experiment and what works for me and what not, what doesn't. It guts me off the path of my true nature. Because I needed the acceptance of my dad, so I adjusted. But actually getting back in connection with that creativity is hard for me. It's my nature, but it's very hard.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's actually, yeah, something that you learned from your parents, like a belief system that you was communicated as well, like you heard it, it was said, but then there's also the unsaid, things that we have from maybe also our grandparents, that transmits
it's the same thing with unspoken ideas. People, when they have kids, most of the time they have ideas or wishes or hopes for their kids for some reason, and most of the time it's dreams they don't have realized themselves. Mm-hmm. But we have to realize that our kids are their own person and they have their own wants and needs. And we cannot project our own missed adventures onto our children. It's not because I wanted to go to art school that, for example, if I would have a girl or a boy or a son or a daughter, that they should go there. I have to look at, okay, but who is my kid and what are their needs? And maybe my kid wants to do mathematics and I'm going to be triggered like, oh, no, you should not be doing that. If I have not worked on that, so I'm going to restrict my own kids because of my needs, either the same way. Okay, I've become a doctor, so you're going to become a doctor because that's how our family is. Or I became a doctor, but I didn't want to. So you can definitely not become a doctor, even though maybe that person wants to, and it's their own choice.
So basically it's about, if I sum it up, it's about like getting conscious about your own shit, so to say, so that you don't pass it on. Like, for example, if I take your example, like you chose math because of your dad, but you didn't really like it and you liked creativity, then for your daughter, when she would draw, you would be like, oh, I'm so happy for you, you know, and I would always try to give you pens and pencils and whatever and paint to be creative. And on the other side, my son would be super nerdy in numbers, and I would be like, oh, whatever, you know, like, I don't care. So basically to be aware of your programming and then to be conscious in the relationship you have, especially with your kids, but also with your partner, to be aware of, okay, who did I had to be in order to be loved or in order to receive love? Yeah. Like, as you were saying, and while we were discussing before recording, we were also saying like, okay, there's like this role, like this identity, who am I? And this role we adapt as kids, basically, in order to get love and attention. For example, you were saying that if I am a kid, that's always helping, you know, and I get attention from my mom that's saying, oh, wow, you're helping. That's so great. Then this becomes like kind of my identity. Or you were saying that it's a part of
quality, me. The quality becomes an identity. And then you lose touch with all the other sides or all the other qualities of yourself. And you feel like you have to continue doing that one point in order to be loved or to be seen. Because if you stop doing it, you don't know who you are anymore. And that's a conflict within yourself, because we want to be seen for who we are and not for what we do. Mm-hmm. Because that is unconditional love. Mm. Being loved for who we are and not for what we do.
Yeah, no matter the shadow sides or the dark sides, like, this is the acceptance, the full acceptance of the being. And so in that case, I would be like, this would be like my thing. I would maybe choose a job where I help others. Like, I will always be in this helping mode also with other people. because unconsciously this is the role that I get, that I think I have to get in order to get love. Yeah.
And the thing is not that it's definitely, if it becomes an identity, it's definitely a quality of yours. But if it becomes an identity, it becomes more important than your own needs. If it's a quality, you know when it's enough and when to put a boundary. If it's your identity, you're continuously doing it and you have no idea that underneath there is a need to be seen and to be loved.
Mm. So that I live without boundaries, that I help others, and yeah, and then the point where it's not good for me. Yeah,
and then you get angry with people when they don't acknowledge the fact that you're helping.
Mm.
If you do it because you know it's a quality of yourself, then you know when to stop and when you overstep. For example, sometimes I see clients wanting to help their children.
Mm-hmm.
But that kid doesn't need that help, but the parent wants to be there. So they overstep the boundaries of the kid. And then after that, they're angry with their kid because they're not grateful. Yeah, but I cleaned for you. And then the kid is, yeah, but I didn't ask you to. Yeah, but I want to do. Yeah, then don't ask me or expect me to be grateful for something that I didn't ask for.
Mm-hmm.
So there's boundaries being overstepped.
Mm-hmm.
Because you take responsibility or you belittle your kid in one way or another, and you can have it as a nurse, you can do it as a doctor, and if you don't realize that okay, you're good at helping, and you do it also to get some recognition, then you will revenge your clients or patients sometimes without realizing, or you're gonna overwork. Because you think, yeah, I have to do that all the time. And then you get angry with people or you overstep your own boundaries. And then you get into a burnout or something else. So it's really interesting to understand the drive and to realize that you are more than that specific quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you were giving a picture that I found super interesting and helpful. It's like that you as a person are a bus, or that life is a bus, and you're like sitting at the steer wheel, like, yeah. you're driving the van, and your qualities are, so to say, sitting in the back. And one of the times, or maybe you can explain it, was,
yeah,
your
you can. Yeah, compare yourself with a bus, and if your quality becomes your identity, it's the quality that is driving the bus.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means that the quality decides where you go, whether it is needed or wanted or not. It will decide where it goes. If you as a person are in the seat, in the driver's seat, then all your qualities are in the bus, and you decide, okay, in this situation, I'm going to use this and this and this quality. If not, in whatever situation you come, you're going to try to help and force that help. Well, in some situations, it's not that. For example, I would come to my parents with a problem and I just want to vent. But because my mom identifies with a helper, she's going to take over because she thinks if I'm talking to her that she needs to help me. Well, I actually want her to listen and to be there, and I will fix it. And if you are at the driving seat as a person, knowing that you have qualities, you will figure out or try to figure out, okay, what is needed here? What is truly needed here? And in what way can I be there? If it's a quality, it will automatically help or offer help or like push help. I'm going to take over. I'm going to fix your problem. Well, actually, that's not what you need.
Mm. So you know that you can help. And if you are in the driver's seat instead of the helper being in the driver's seat, you can say, hey, what do you need? For example, you know, you
for example,
ask, what do you need? And if the person says, I just want to let it out, then it should also not trigger you, like in the sense like, oh, but we need to find a solution right now. You know, like,
yeah,
this could be like, okay, if you just want to talk about it, it's okay for me. So everything where we actually feel like a resistance to, like we cannot accept the reality or the people how they are, this could also be an indicator that there's something, that unconscious program happening in the background of, you know, like a PC, if you have too many programs open, you know, that it gets slower. Like it's kind of that that thing that I feel like there's a program in the background running, like I have to solve problems, I have to help, I have to find a solution. It's my responsibility, although it's not.
Yeah. And then you get angry if it's not being seen or you're not being recognized for things that you do, because you do it out of your need to be seen and not because this is the thing I want to be doing just because I want to be doing that.
Or because it helps the other person. Like you think it helps the other person, although it's all about you and not about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super interesting. So how is it possible to get, to get aware of these programs? Like also, what does your work consist of? Maybe you can take us into the, not a process, but how would that look like? Like, I don't know, what are your clients coming for? Like when they're reaching out to you, what is like the standard?
Morning? Most of the time my clients just don't know it anymore. And then they come. And then little by little, most of the time, not the first session. If people come with, I notice a pattern, then I can get dig deeper into that and look in the system what's going on there. And then I start asking them about the family tree and do they have siblings? Are they the firstborn, secondborn, the lastborn? What about their parents? How was the birth, the pregnancy? Is there anything they know of? And we start drawing a family tree. That's most of the time one of the homeworks, and it's very interesting because then you start seeing in one big paper what is happening in your family. Most of the time you've heard all these stories, but you don't see the pattern unless you put it on paper.
You put the pattern on paper, because what I would draw my family, like mother, father, these are the siblings, these are
You make a, I don't know how you call it in English, a genogram, where you have you make a family tree with round circles for female, squares for male, and then you build up the family up. Mm-hmm. And there you write down whether they died early or not, how many years they were apart, whether they got divorced, whether they are living or dying children, whether there's a handicap. And most of the time you can already see a pattern. You can already see, oh, this is interesting. If I see it on one paper, I can see my mom has only sisters. My aunt, my grandmother only had sisters. So there's something there with male energy. I don't know what it is. That's something to look for. Or, okay, they have been moved abroad and they have moved abroad and they have moved abroad. So now I understand why I feel like I don't belong here. I want to run away. It's like a pattern in my system. Mm-hmm. That whenever something happens, I run or I go or I move abroad so I don't have to deal with some family issues, for example. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because then we start understanding. I had, for example, a client that had an abortion and we started drawing her family tree. Her brother has a kid that he doesn't acknowledge. Mm-hmm. Her parents have been unplanned pregnant when they were 19. And they felt that it was too much and they had to get married and all of that. And suddenly they had to start working while they actually were not ready. So that continues actually in the children.
Mm-hmm.
So they make different choices because there's a resentment or whatever, or they wish their life could be different, or they think my life would be different if this and this and this would have happened. And these kids feel that.
Mm.
And when we were looking into her pattern, there were more things in her family tree that were more like that. There were more things with children, that children came at a moment that they were not ready. And that because of becoming pregnant, some people in her family tree had to get married and things like that. So it continues. If you don't talk about that and you don't address the emotions and work with that, okay, this is how it is and I have to accept it, but there's some resentment. I wish I could do it differently. Whatever, you pass it on to the next generation unconsciously because of the stories, because of whatever, because you feel as a kid, there's something wrong. And I am to blame because I came And because of me, my parents had to do this and this and this. Well, actually, it's not you. It's because of what your parents did. And then you take responsibility for something that was not yours. I mean, you didn't decide to come. Your parents had sex. And that is why you came here. So it's not a responsibility of the kid, but the kid feels it as if I did something wrong, because our brain is not completely developed when we are little.
Yeah, and it's all about these, the energies that you were talking about. And maybe if that is, that's also something that you feel, no? There are like people you have a connection to and you feel them, and there are people where you feel like, ooh, I don't want to get close to that person, you know? And this is kind of feeling that children are very receptive to, because they are super, they don't have this concept and they're not so detached to their bodies and to their emotions as we adults are, because we have all these concepts how we should behave or how we should feel in certain situations. So basically, and what I also think is super interesting to say is that normally we should be able to be happy and to be light and to enjoy life and to be here to enjoy life and not feel like, oh, I'm drained, everything's so heavy, everything's so annoying and life is hard and, you know, all these kind of things that we keep hearing around us, you know, is due to actually these blocked, as you said, these blockages, the emotional blockages that are sometimes not our own, like that are sometimes coming from other generations.
Yeah. So, it's just interesting to see the pattern. And also then I started with emotional releases to research what patterns are there unconsciously. And then little by little, you go into that. Where are emotions there? What stories do you know? What are stories that are been told? What sentences have you heard all the time? Because the more you repeat it, you just start swallowing it and believing it without thinking, like, is that how I think about life? Or is this just because it's been told and I just continue doing it? And that's how you set yourself free and start breaking yourself free and start reconnecting way more with what are my needs, what are my emotions? Where does my responsibility end and where does it begin? So you can break through the patterns. But it's a painful process most of the time. And it takes some time. And every step lightens, liberates you a little bit more. But it's not that I can fix it or that you can fix it or heal it in a few sessions. You have to realize that it's been generations before you that have been created a pattern. And the more somebody in the generation or in the family tree works on it, the more the system opens and the less there is a prison. But it also is a drive for us to heal and to do better. So it has both good sides and bad sides.
Like life, no? It's like everything in life is not purely good or purely bad. So you were saying that the system opens up. It's just a curiosity. Like, I know that there are like certain things happening then in the system. Like you were saying, okay, one person is working on their stuff and then all of a sudden it has an effect on the system. Can you talk about that a little bit?
When you have intergenerational trauma patterns and systemic things, you can compare it with frozen energy. Like it's stuck, it's compressed, and it's dense. If I start digging into that, I will break that clump or lump of ice into pieces. Little pieces are way easier to navigate, but when there's a big block, you know how to navigate around that. If it becomes little pieces, it will start flowing and drifting away, and it will get away or like resonate with somebody. We are all connected. So for example, if I will make a move, you will notice it unconsciously and maybe in a little way. But if it rains here in another country, it has an effect because everything is connected. If you see the earth, that area around it where our oxygen and stuff is, when something happens in Iceland, when the volcano was bursting out, we could feel it here. And it's the same thing that happens with energy. If something happens in my system and I heal, I will have a different pattern or a different attitude towards you. And because of that, you cannot continue your old pattern with me. So that's going to be a change. If I'm used to say, oh, but it's okay, I will do it. And at some point I start using boundaries, it will have an effect on you. And you're going to get, oh shit, I don't like this. Or you're going to be angry. Why don't you do this anymore? And what is up with you? And why this or why that? Because it you're so used that I'm going to do it anyways, that you get mad at a certain point that I'm not doing it anymore. While it probably is not even my responsibility. So that is how it affects. And if I start recognizing or like realizing the patterns, that pattern already gets some attention. So it has been seen and acknowledged. So it's easier for the next person to do so. Mm-hmm. Because I worked on it. And instead of making the block of ice bigger, we make it smaller. And things that are smaller are easier to navigate, are easier to digest, are easier to handle. Mm-hmm. So the more people work on it, the smaller bits and pieces it becomes, the easier it becomes to work through. So every step you take is also having an effect on the next generation.
Wow. So what happens if I don't get kids?
Then it also happens or helps the family system, your brothers, your sisters, and their kids. That's the family energy. So it doesn't matter if you don't have kids, it doesn't stop with you. It heals because we are all connected. So if you heal, your energy will be different. Mm-hmm. And you will inspire people with that, and it will have an effect on your environment, whether that is family or not. Mm-hmm. But family is in the beginning. Most of the time, the people you spend the most time with, especially mm-hmm. in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So we inherit our genes. And not only our genes, our physical body comes from that system. And every cell has a memory and have trauma energy, and that is where it comes from. So it's locked energy in your cells as well.
Mm.
Yes. And you liberate that, you free that, you get the cell's potential to be vibrant a little bit more out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it heals. We have an inherent like drive to heal. Nature wants to heal and wants to be healthy.
Mm.
But because we fear certain things, we push the healing movements of our body, and society does it as well. We push it down.
Mm.
And that because of that, we become more and more unhappy and disconnected from ourselves and our needs.
Yeah.
And then we fill those needs with buying things and chocolate and alcohol and work and whatever.
Mm. Yeah, we compensate in order. Yeah. So basically it's when we don't feel completely free or completely, good the way we are.
Free is like a balance between feeling free and also connected.
Mm-hmm.
Because completely free and not having to take into account your environment, that is not healthy either. It's a balance, again, between giving and receiving, between, okay, I take care of my own needs, but I don't become greedy.
Mm.
There's a difference.
Mm.
There is a difference. In nature, you see that monkeys eat until they have enough and then they leave it. They're not going to collect everything to make sure that they're never without. That's a human thing to do.
Mm.
Because they inherently think that nature is abundant and they don't think about tomorrow, but we have like a hole there and we get more and more and more and more. Well, actually there is enough for everybody if everybody just takes their piece.
Mm. So also in relationships, no? Like that you can feel connected, but also free, like that this balance is restored. And that's what many relationships suffer from, is that either you have a super independent person that's like completely, I want to be free, I have freedom, I don't want to be too much attached. And the other part that's too much into the codependency and into I want more and more and more, and it's never enough. And I need connection, and I don't know who am I without anybody else or without a partner, for example.
Yeah,
super interesting.
If you have healthy autonomy, you take your own needs into account without harming the needs of the group. And that's healthy autonomy, as in, I'm not going to take more than what is my share. I'm not going to do something because I want to do it and have others be harmed. It's okay to put boundaries. Somebody else is not going to die for that. But you see that in nature, it happens normally. There is a harmony. A lion is not going to kill 10 animals just because he can. He's going to kill one until everybody's fed and it's done. That's what it is. We do it out of pleasure or because we like it or those kind of things, which is imbalanced between nature. We throw away a lot of food, for example, and that's because of the I want, and there's another need underneath where we have no connection with.
Yeah, and it's probably also this I have to do, or, you know, to do certain things in order to feel accepted, or to have certain things in order to feel accepted and loved. And that if I realize that I'm loved the way I am, and that I don't have to be somebody else or something else or do something else, then this liberates in the sense that I don't have the feeling I need that. I need that house. I need that relationship. I need these children. I need that world travel, whatever, you know, like it's not, it's maybe a feeling, at least from my perspective, like a feeling of flowing that you have a trust in life and you flow like, okay, I flow this way because this is where life takes me. And I'm not afraid. I'm not, you know, holding on to
the feeling of satisfaction stays way longer when it's in a healthy way than when it becomes from a blocked way. If you eat a piece of chocolate and after a little piece or just a piece you're satisfied for a long time, that's healthy. It's totally fine to enjoy chocolate or desserts or whatever. If you feel like I eat a piece and it's not enough, and I eat another piece and it's not enough, and I eat another piece, there is something else. It's okay to want nice things sometimes, but it doesn't mean that it's really, really, truly satisfies us. It's more like a numbingness. And if it's a numbingness, then there's something deeper. Then there's a need or whatever that is not fulfilled, and we compensate it. We overrule it with something else because the need was not fulfilled as a kid. And we learned to subsidize it with something else.
Super interesting. Yeah. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. I mean, as a society, we function like that. Capitalism basically functions like that and needs consumption in order to function. So we are constantly, you know, fed into this machine of we need this, that. Once I have this, I'll be happy. Once I have this, I'll be happy. So always like being like a mule with a carrot in front of the nose, you know, like always, oh, there's always more. There's always more. And I just need to do that. But just to be in the present moment and to feel I'm in the right place, I'm in the right time, everything's okay. Like also to feel that relief into the system, into the body. I think this is something that maybe can give people a clue, like how could it feel once you go on this path and once you work, for example, like a person with you, like you, you know, like a systemic coach, or what we do, what we learn, the emotional release, like once you get on this path and once you learn about yourself, about your patterns, about all the conditioning and reconnect with yourself, that's when you feel that ease more and more, like you don't feel.
Yeah, and you feel way more liberated and easier satisfied. There's like a peace or a calmness or a more connected to the now moment, instead of having to plan everything and needing this and this and this and this and this. You can feel in the moment, okay, this is what I need or would like, and go for it or not go for it, or take the consequences. It's also that, like taking the consequences for the decisions that you make and the movements that you make, but you will feel like choices, the more you are connected to the true you, the easier choices become, because it's not a choice. You're going to feel what is right for you. If you have difficulties with making a decision, with making a choice, there's definitely a disconnection from who you are, who you truly are. Because with your mind, you can make pros and cons for everything you imagine. Yes. And it makes it hard to decide because there's only one choice that is the closest to or the most like the most connected to you at this moment. Mm-hmm. But if you have no connection to your body whatsoever or your true needs, then you can make decisions in your head and make pro cons lists, but it's not what it is that you truly desire. Mm-hmm. And then you might be disappointed because you made a list and it doesn't help and it doesn't satisfy you, or you don't feel okay with your choice. You're always thinking, what if I would have been chosen this or this? Mm-hmm. If you are closer to yourself, if you do this work, choices become easier because you feel connected way more to what it is that you truly need and desire. Mm-hmm. And not those unconscious numbing things or what society shows you or teaches you that is a good life or a happy life. Mm. You can feel what is truly bringing you peace or happiness or relief or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, that's so beautiful.
Or excitement or things like that.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good example. Like now also for coming slowly to an end, but that's a good example where people maybe might realize or recognize like, oh yeah, I know that from myself that I'm really bad at making decisions, you know, because I'm not feeling into. And this is the part that's actually pretty difficult in a society where we have like, you know, everything proven, everything is like a, you know, and when you start saying, well, that's how I feel, like, for example, my decision to move to Portugal is something I felt. It's nothing I was doing pros and cons list and something like that. And it might have seemed for many people the dumbest thing to do, but that's, and I don't regret it. It was the right thing. But this is like how I felt like when you argument with the feeling, it often is like not really catchable for the people around you when you say, I felt it. Like, how do you feel it? Like, how do you, you know, like that's super strange, you know? But yeah, I think maybe we can start to get more used to the feelings and feeling things and to our intuition, basically.
Definitely.
And trust that. Yeah. Lizzie, it was a pleasure to talk to you, as always, but especially here for the podcast. There were so many gold nuggets, so many wisdom pieces that I draw from that, and I guess a lot of people, listeners, also would draw from that. And thank you.
You're welcome.
For being here, and all the info to your work, to your website, everything that you do, or, you know, how people can reach out to you will be written down in the show notes, like in the notes of the episode. And yeah, is there something that you want to say, like for the end of the, of this conversation?
No, really. Not specifically. I think just follow the gut. If you feel that something is off or you don't feel satisfied with things, go deeper, dig deeper, because the gold is where the pain is. Mm-hmm. So follow the trail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Last words here for this conversation. Thank you so much, Lizzie, for being here. And yeah, everyone else, check out Lizzie on Instagram, on her website. And yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.